Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
History hinges on moments so small they could fit in the palm of your hand, yet their consequences echo through centuries and shape the world we live in today. This is Historical What Ifs, where we explore the alternate timelines that could have emerged from a single different decision, a missed opportunity, or a stroke of luck that went the other way. Today's episode examines one of those pivotal moments and traces the extraordinary chain of events that might have followed if history had taken just one small turn in a different direction. Welcome to Historical What Ifs, reimagining pivotal moments.
It is so good to be with you all. Today, we're tackling a question that, for me, has always been the ultimate historical what-if. It's one of those moments that feels so seismic, so foundational to our modern world, that imagining its absence is almost dizzying.
I know exactly what you mean. From a storytelling perspective, it's the ultimate drama. You have a society on a knife's edge, a collection of characters, a faltering king, an ambitious middle class, a starving populace, and it feels like any one of 100 different decisions could have tipped it in another direction. I've always been fascinated by Louis XVI, not as a tyrant, but as a man paralyzed by indecision. What if he had just been a little stronger, a little wiser?
Right. Or what if the harvests of 1787 and 88 hadn't been quite so catastrophic? It's that combination of vast, impersonal forces and deeply personal choices that makes it so compelling. For me, it's about the ideas. The French Revolution wasn't just a political event. It was an intellectual explosion. It put concepts like popular sovereignty and the rights of man on the world stage in a way that had never been seen before.
Which leads us to the heart of our episode today. The question isn't just, what if the Bastille was never stormed? It's so much bigger. What if the very idea of revolution as we know it had been smothered in its cradle?
Exactly. What if the ancien regime, the old order of kings and nobles, had managed to stumble on, unchallenged? We're about to construct a world without Napoleon. A Europe where the map isn't redrawn by force. And a timeline where the words liberté, égalité, fraternité might never have been uttered. The implications are staggering, and that's precisely what we're going to unpack.
And that's the crux of it, isn't it? Let's start there. Let's take the most plausible, least dramatic path. What if Louis XVI wasn't, well, Louis XVI? What if he had the political savvy of, say, an Elizabeth I? And he successfully navigates the crisis of 1789. He doesn't flee, he doesn't get captured. He makes concessions, establishes a form of constitutional monarchy, a grand charte for France. The Bastille is never stormed, because the immediate crisis is averted. What does that France, that Europe, look like in, say, 1800?
That is a fascinating starting point, because my immediate reaction is skepticism. Can you really make a deal with a tidal wave? The financial crisis was the trigger, sure, but the underlying pressures, the intellectual ferment of the Enlightenment, the deep, deep structural inequality of the three estates, could a few royal decrees really solve that? I imagine a France simmering with resentment, a kind of cold civil war, where the forms of the old world are kept, but the trust is just gone.
Oh, I don't think it solves it. Not at all. But it might redirect it. Instead of a singular, explosive event, you get a century of political struggle. Think more 19th century Britain with its slow, painful reform acts than a revolutionary republic. The nobility would still exist, but their power would be constantly challenged in this new assembly. You wouldn't have the rights of man declared with a capital R, but you might have, I don't know, the accommodations of the citizen hashed out in committees.
The accommodations of the citizen. Wow. That just sounds so much less inspiring, doesn't it? And that's the point, I think. The French Revolution was an ideological supernova. It declared universal principles. Your scenario, which is probably more realistic, neuters that. the ideas of liberty and popular sovereignty don't become a world-changing export. They become a domestic French political squabble.
They get bogged down in parliamentary procedure. Exactly. And what does that mean for the rest of the world? There's no revolutionary contagion. The monarchies of Austria, Prussia, Russia, they aren't terrified into forming coalitions against a radical France. They don't have to react.
So they don't have to reform themselves either.
Precisely. The incentive isn't there. Serfdom in Russia might persist for even longer. The push for constitutional limits on monarchs across Germany and Italy, that loses its primary inspiration. The Haitian Revolution, does Toussaint Louverture have the same ideological framework to draw on if the Jacobins never come to power in Paris and abolish slavery?
My God, I hadn't even considered that. The entire liberation movement in the Caribbean and Latin America is what? Delayed? Does it take a completely different non-republican form? Because they were all reading translations of the Declaration of the Rights of Man. If that document is just a forgotten draft in a Parisian archive.
It changes everything. And we haven't even touched on the biggest personality to emerge from the chaos. Without the Revolutionary Wars, without the Siege of Toulon, a young, ambitious Corsican artillery officer by the name of Napoleone di Buonaparte, what becomes of him?
He probably dies a disgruntled, middle-aged colonel in some provincial garrison, writing pamphlets that nobody reads. There is no Emperor Napoleon. There's no Napoleonic Code. No redrawing of the map of Europe. The Holy Roman Empire. Does it just keep going? This bizarre, thousand-year-old feudal patchwork? The mind just reels.
It does, doesn't it? Because it's not just a political entity. The Holy Roman Empire continuing means the very idea of the modern nation-state is, what, delayed by a century? The idea that you are a citizen of Germany rather than a subject of the Elector of Bavaria or the King of Prussia, that entire shift in identity which the Revolution and Napoleon supercharged across Europe might just wither on the vine.
It's a world without nationalism as we know it. And if we pull the lens back from the map and look inside this alternate France of 1800, if the political structure is a kind of creaking, patched-up antique, what does the economy look like? The real revolution, for all its bloodshed, was a massive economic bulldozer. It abolished the guilds. It got rid of the bewildering system of internal tariffs and tax farming.
Oh, a complete nightmare. You needed a team of accountants just to move goods from Paris to Marseille.
Right. So in our timeline, where Louis XVI negotiates a bronze chart, do those deeply entrenched systems just stay? Do the guilds, with their stranglehold on who can be a baker or a candlestick maker, continue to block innovation?
I think you're right, because reform like that creates losers. The tax farmers, the guild masters, they are powerful, influential people. A king making careful concessions isn't going to wipe out their livelihoods. A revolutionary assembly with the guillotine in the background? That's a different story. So you have a France that is politically, let's say, semi-reformed, but economically stuck.
And what is happening right across the channel at this exact moment?
The Industrial Revolution is hitting its stride. Britain is building factories, canals. They're not held back by feudal-era economics. So this alternate France, this stable, non-revolutionary France, might actually be a weaker, less competitive country in the long run. It avoids the chaos of the 1790s.
It avoids the hyperinflation of the assignats, for sure.
A huge point. But in doing so, it misses that brutal but necessary clearing of the decks. And what about the single biggest asset in the country? The land. The revolution nationalized all the church lands. It broke up huge aristocratic estates. It created, over time, a new France of small, independent farmers. That is a social transformation on a scale that is almost impossible to comprehend.
And it simply doesn't happen in our what if. The church remains one of the largest landowners in Europe, the old nobility, while maybe their political power is trimmed a bit in this new assembly, they still own vast tracts of the country. The average peasant's life might not change at all. The promise of égalité is completely absent.
Which also makes me think about the people who were just beginning to find a voice in the revolutionary clamor. I'm thinking of women. The revolution was in many ways a profound disappointment for women's rights. They were granted very little, and the Jacobins actively suppressed their political clubs. But for a moment you had Olympe de Gouges writing the Declaration of the Rights of Woman. You had women marching on Versailles. That conversation, however brutally it was shut down.
Does it even start in a world of polite negotiated reforms? The Declaration of the Rights of Man was a radical document. De Gouges' work was a radical response to a radical idea. If the core document is instead the accommodations of the citizen, a dry piece of legislation hammered out in committee, where does the ideological spark for something so profound as a Declaration of Women's Rights come from? It feels unthinkable in that context.
And that really is the heart of it, isn't it? The violence of the revolution created a vacuum where radical new ideas, even ones that were quickly suppressed, could be spoken aloud for the first time. Without that violence, without that break, the silence is just deafening. But you know, as we've been building this world, this quieter, staler, non-revolutionary world, I have to ask, is it entirely worse?
Oh? How do you mean? We've just outlined a world of economic stagnation, entrenched inequality, delayed nationalism, and stifled human rights.
I know. But it's also a world without the reign of terror. It's a world where hundreds of thousands aren't summarily executed. It's a world that doesn't descend into the Napoleonic Wars, a conflict that set the entire continent ablaze and killed, 5 million people. We avoided the guillotine, but we also avoided Austerlitz.
That is the terrible calculus of history, right there. Peace versus progress. Stability versus justice. You're right. In our what if, that young artillery officer, Napoleon, never gets the chance to become a continent-spanning butcher. But he also never gets the chance to spread the Napoleonic Code, which for all its flaws, was a revolutionary legal framework that enshrined principles of equality before the law.
It's an impossible trade-off, and I think for me, that's the key insight from this whole exercise. We look back at the revolution as this inevitable, almost glorious explosion of liberty, but by averting it, we create a world that might be more peaceful, more stable, but also a world that is fundamentally less free and less dynamic. The engine of modernity has been throttled.
Exactly. The world is spared the trauma, but it's also denied the lesson. The idea that a people can and should remake their own society? That sovereignty resides with the nation, not the king. That idea was paid for in blood. And in our alternate timeline, that bill never comes due. But the purchase is never made. The world remains unpurchased.
Unpurchased. I like that. It's a ghost world, really. Haunted by the possibilities that never came to pass. And it leaves me with one final, nagging question. In our scenario, the Ancien regime stumbles on, but for how long? Could that system of entrenched privilege and feudal economics truly have survived the industrial age? Could it have survived the rise of mass media?
That's the question, isn't it? Maybe the explosion would have just come later. Maybe in 1848 or 1870. Or maybe it never would have come at all. Maybe Europe would have just slowly ossified. A living museum. And that, I think, is a more chilling thought than any guillotine. This has been Historical What Ifs. Thank you for joining us on this journey through a past that never was. The butterfly effect of history reminds us that the world we know today is just one of countless possibilities, shaped by moments of chance, choice, and consequence that could have easily gone another way. This has been Historical What Ifs, where every episode reveals how fragile our timeline really is, and how different decisions by our ancestors might have created an entirely different present. Understanding these alternate possibilities doesn't just satisfy our curiosity. It helps us appreciate how remarkable it is that we ended up in this particular version of history.